Dzień dobry, Edi Pyrek, Układ Otwarty. Zapraszam Państwa dzisiaj na spotkanie z niesamowitym człowiekiem, Scott Eastman. Troszeczkę człowiek legenda, jeżeli chodzi o super forecasting i o futurologię. Jeden ze 120 najlepszych super forecasterów, czyli futurologów na świecie, doradzający rządom, organizacjom, biznesowi, armii, etc., etc. Dzisiaj opowie nam o tym, w jaki sposób przygotować się do przyszłości, ale co więcej, opowie nam również o tym, jak ta przyszłość najbardziej prawdopodobnie będzie wyglądała. Dowiemy się, co zrobić, jak żyć, a także jakie pytania sobie stawiać i jakie pytania omijać.
A oto mecenasi Układu Otwartego. OnGeo.pl, geoportal dostarczający raport o terenie z diagnozą dowolnej działki dla właścicieli, sprzedających lub kupujących.
E2V, firma, która zajmuje się sprzedażą zielonej energii w standardzie ESG. XTB, polska platforma inwestycyjna oferująca dostęp do instrumentów finansowych, bieżących analiz rynkowych oraz setek godzin darmowych materiałów edukacyjnych. Nowoferm, dostawca bram, drzwi i ramp dla przemysłu, logistyki oraz użytkowników prywatnych.
Hello, Scott Eastman. Amazing super forecaster, amazing guy, but in reality, who are you?
Good question. So
it's kind of the psychology.
Yeah, exactly. Question. Yes. So I feel like I've lived many different lives. So I didn't start out being a super forecaster. I started out doing completely other things. I studied literature, studied photography. I've had different background, painting, many different things. But I moved to Romania originally doing documentary photography. But in the last 10 years, I've been working primarily in forecasting. And that's everything from looking at catastrophic and existential risks, like things that could destroy humanity on Earth, that could just significantly impact the way we live or quality of life, but also looking at a lot of just more practical, understandable things like wars, pandemics, economy, just anything going on that's really going to affect us.
I'm curious about this existential risk. Can you say that a bit more?
Yeah.
What is the biggest danger which we are facing now?
So one of the strange things about looking at existential risk is we look at things that people are maybe have some fear about that we have a lot of background. So if we look at something like the last 60-65 million years, we can look at Earth and see when there have been impacts of meteorites or volcanoes, you know, all these things that even though they're really catastrophic, we have a pretty regularity where we can say it happens this much because we can look in the fossil records. And so one of my concerns is what things we don't know. So this is like the unknowns. And one of the areas there is for me, okay, climate change, but climate change, we still have some, it's happening very rapidly, but we see it going up, but still at somewhat a predictable rate. Predictable meaning whatever they say, it's usually a little bit worse, but but still kind of known. And we have some idea even what makes it worse, what makes it better. And right now, an area that we're really concerned about is AI. And with AI, it's one of these things that it could wipe us all out. It could make us have a much better world. It could just be somewhat neutral because we've already gone through many changes in, in humanity where, you know, whether it was Stone Age to Bronze Age to, you know, steam to computer. Like, you know, we have all these different times where we've shifted and each time there's a shift.
Like a paradigm change.
Yeah, exactly. And so when we have these Overton window shifts, when we have these things, there's always some people who are left behind. You know, there's somebody who was a typesetter and they spent their time putting the little lead pieces in to lay out the newspaper and make the text. And then you have the computer and certain people are going to lose their jobs. Others have an easier life. And so with AI or just even with just computers up and how we've used them up until today, it's benefited many people. It's made something like doing a podcast much easier. This is a more professional podcast, but we can also do quite simple ones from our house just with a little computer on the camera, and you can still it allows many people to do what wasn't possible in the past. It would have, you know, required big studios. So there can be all of these positives, but then there's also the negative of who, not on an existential risk, but on a social level, are certain people going to lose their jobs because they're now redundant?
That expect that around 300 million people will lose their jobs in the next 5, 10 years.
Yeah, I've heard this number. And I think part of that is we look at all the jobs that we think, okay, right now, what jobs could be done by AI, AGI, and are not necessary anymore. We don't know which jobs will be created that we currently don't know about. Or does it just mean these people...
Yeah, because we are coming to the unknown space.
Yeah, exactly.
We have no slight idea what will happen.
Right. And what was surprising to me when I started looking in this field was I was, and I still am, primarily concerned with the social disruption of it. And it can be positive. It doesn't only have to be negative. But I also look at it and started working with people who said, we're afraid of actually the end of the world. We're afraid of the end of humanity, meaning everybody's killed. And my first thought was like, well, okay, why would that happen? So I've also looked at things like nuclear risk. And oddly enough, the more I study it, the less I'm concerned about it. I'm still concerned. I know it could obviously impact and kill lots of people, but it's not likely to kill all people. Even if there
but, a few months ago, I spoke with Ben Gartzel. He's the creator of AGI, Artificial General Intelligence. And he said to me, when I asked him how he sees the future and how it will look like and how this happened, he said that according to him, that we will create AGI, it's mean artificial intelligence who can think like a human, on the 8th December 2026, because this is his 60th birthday and he would like to have the good party with real artificial intelligence. Yeah. But in reality, from one point, he's thinking about amazing future, solving the most of the problem. We're living in the paradise. Energy will be free. We'll be superhuman. Mm-hmm. But on another side, he's thinking, okay, it really can destroy humanity. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, the AI can just escape from us. We'll be too stupid for the AI. What do you think about this?
So this is something I don't know, because to me, I still see the AI as a machine. And I have a hard time conceiving, even though I've talked with people, I haven't talked with Ben, but I've talked with people who are expert in this field. And for me, it's one thing to have a machine that can process all sorts of information, but still at this point, it's humans essentially give it an input, and they say, here's our question, come up with the answer to this, and maybe even a complex question, and it needs to answer many parts and put them together and come up with an answer, create something. But it's still not, at this point, asking the questions. It's not having the native creativity, and maybe it will get to that point. So one of the questions would be like, would this entity, because we usually refer to an AI as a, you know, eventually as a he, a she, we've worked with robots, and, you know, we call Sophia she, but it's still inanimate, even though it's, in some ways it
kind
appears
of a fridge, but and more complicated
AI. Yes, but it's still a machine. And will there be a stage where it starts to make its own decisions without our input, or with the input of somebody who's nefarious, who has bad intentions, and just says, "Okay, I want to rule my neighborhood. So I have my AI, whether it's an actual robot or whether it's somebody just that's like somebody hacking now. Like, okay, I'm going to attack all the computer systems around and create that I have more power than everybody else. AI is serving me."
Sorry, but maybe I'm mistaken, but I think the first company, the first government or first nation who will create the AGI will rule the world. Mm-hmm. Because they will have the access, you know, to the amazing knowledge, to the amazing power.
Right.
Are you not afraid? What are you afraid? More about that one day will be like ants for AI, or the one day some Putin or another Trump will use the AI to rule the world? What do you think? What is the biggest threat for us?
Currently, I'm a little less concerned about an AI that is under the control of humans of so-called big powers. Mm-hmm. I am a little more concerned with big powers now as a result of seeing both Putin and Trump, because clearly these are two, you know, huge countries with a lot of technology. Russia's not going to be leading in AI, and as far as I know. But let's say, if we just said China and America, or China, America, Japan, these countries, is even if I may prefer or not prefer one government or form of government, still they're generally trying to run their country to the benefit of humans. Not always perfectly, but I would still say it's, you know, still a human-centered government. But what if it gets beyond that? What if it's, you know, to the point where the AGI actually has more power than the human? And right now that still seems, I talk with people who say they think that's going to be 4 years, 5 years, 6 years off. My own personal view is it's going to be much further than that. But if you look at exponential growth of computer, both processing ability to work on much larger models, take in much more data, the data set that they're training on, and just better methods. It may be closer than the time where it passes human thinking, cognition, maybe relatively soon. But then there's one thing between, is it going to be better than us? Because already for a long time, since I was a little kid, a computer could handle math questions, absolutely faster than I can. But where it starts to take over so many decisions that we are no longer necessary. And then a question comes up, would it have any intent? Would it be in its interest, if it has such a thing as an interest, would it be in its interest to start doing things where it says, okay, the human is a problem, the human's in my way, I'm going to eliminate it. So for instance, if I'm in my house and I don't want a lot of ants in my house, I may just get some spray and they're a pain. But I don't go kill all the insects in the world. And humans haven't gone around and tried to kill all the insects in the world. One is we probably, kill ourselves in the process, but we also say, oh, if the ants out in the yard, it doesn't bother me. It's not my problem.
But
the cockroach.
If they will have the one goal and the artificial intelligence will have another goal or will be misunderstanding our goal, I think it can be disastrous.
Yeah, we call this misalignment. There's called the alignment issue in artificial intelligence. And so I gave this example of an idea where a human gives an AGI a task, but then the AGI takes this too far. Mm-hmm. And so there's this theory called the paperclip problem, where the AGI is told by a human, we want you to make as many paperclips as possible. Seems like not a big problem. You tell a human to make as many paperclips as possible. Maybe they, get steel from a steel factory, set up an assembly line.
That's quite simpler problem.
And they're going to make some paperclips. But if it's taking this to an extreme and never having something in this feedback loop that says, once I reach a certain point, I'm going to stop. Then what does it do? Does it start taking all the resources of the earth to make paperclips? Does it see, humans are using some steel. That's getting in my way. These cars are, have metal. My glasses are metal. These aren't, but yours are.
Yeah.
But they might say, okay, we're going to try to come up with all of the energy necessary, all the energy in the world. It'll go beyond the world and try to get energy beyond this world and just keep exponentially larger, going after making more paperclips.
So this means universe will collapse because we need paperclips.
Paperclips, yeah. And so this was just given as an example of where a simple command, could go very wrong if it was given to an entity that has much more knowledge, much more power to control material things in the world than we do. And so this was given when I've been in groups trying to figure out, do we have a huge risk in the short term or not? This was given as an example. And part of this came with the idea that will an AGI or a singularity, this idea of like a, all-powerful AGI, will this happen over a very, very short period of time? Mm-hmm. Because if it's not just like, okay, each year it's getting a little bit more power, and at some point along the line we go, it's a little too much power. We need to put some control on it. I mean, humans are already working to put some control on it. Yeah. But if this
AI app, for example, European Union.
Yeah, yeah. And so if it reaches a point where it crosses this threshold and then just exponentially goes off the scale over a matter of weeks, because some people think it will just be something where it's completely quick, then we could be doomed. One of the nice things in terms of working with forecasters, with top forecasters, is I work with people across many different fields, not just in AI, in computer technology, but also people who have backgrounds in physics and mathematics, in mining, in large scale construction projects, in military, in intelligence, all of these different areas. And so one of the areas where I'm a little less afraid, although I can't say I have certainty because we're simply going into the realm of the unknown. But one area where I'm a little less afraid is because I say, okay, we have 8 million people on the world. And even if roughly 8 million, I don't know exactly.
Billion.
Yeah,
it's okay.
Billion. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Maybe you already expect the world and just cutting most of the
This
ants.
Was from 2 years later. but we have 8 billion people in the world, roughly, and we have a head start. Mm-hmm. So humans already have all sorts of destructive capacity. We already have very organized militaries. We have the electric infrastructure and some ability to shut these things down or to attack something. Mm-hmm. So right now, we're not saying, okay, let's go bomb the computer center. But if we reach a point where, if this doesn't happen overnight, if it's mm-hmm. something where we see, oh my God, this is really starting to be detrimental to humans, would we reach a point where we say this is going to take a global human effort to rein it in because it's gone too far? And maybe an example to look at this, both positive and negative, is the recent COVID pandemic, because the scientific community of the world got together and actually shared quite a bit of information quickly. And even though we may have a lot of problems with China released the information they had on the COVID virus. Yeah. People in the US, people in Germany, people all over in labs worked very quickly to come up with a vaccine, to come up with treatments. And as much as it was somewhat dysfunctional, there was sharing of information across countries. But we also know that humans didn't do always a very good job of working together, looking out for each other. You know, it was this mix of, okay, we're coming together some, but okay, I'm going to keep these medicines for my country, not your country. And so, but it wasn't truly an existential threat. It wasn't like we know in the next, 10 weeks we have to do something or this giant thing's going to collapse. So, if the progress of an AI is slow enough, if the humans recognize it, early enough that something is really getting out of control, can they rein it in? And I'm still optimistic about that, but it's one of these areas that just simply because it's an unknown, because we've never encountered something like this.
Yeah, we couldn't compare it to anything.
I can't compare it to anything. And so some of the people in the field of AI might list existential risk anywhere from the next, let's say, 10 to 70 years at 30%, which is extremely high. Because if we look at any other area of existential risk,
like nuclear weapons,
nuclear war, the chance of a nuclear war might be somewhere around 1% per year, or a little bit less, and that we're not even sure about because we
and 30% for yeah. AI.
No, but so I'm talking about like the chance of a nuclear war in any given year.
Uh-huh.
One idea is it's 1%, but we really don't know because uh-huh. we know they happened in 1945. You can call it one or two blasts. Mm-hmm. It was two blasts, but
yeah.
was it one?
Yeah.
One event. But that was when there was only one country with nuclear power, not multiple countries. Since there are multiple countries, we've had no nuclear war. But even if we had nuclear war, we know it would be devastating, but it would not likely destroy all humans. With AI, we simply don't know. And we don't have any, we can look at things like nuclear war and say, okay, how did humans get together and work on arms control treaties? We stopped doing above ground testing. There's quite a few areas where we limited which countries have it. It's mm-hmm. it's not perfect, but humanity did and is still currently making some positive steps in this area.
For me, it's very mm-hmm. interesting because you said that, for example, about AI, that we have more or less 30% that...
I'm not saying that.
I'm saying there are some
people who are...
In your opinion.
Yeah, so in my opinion, I'm less than 1%. But even saying less than 1%, so if I don't remember the last number I wrote when I was working mm-hmm. on this, but even if I say it's 0.3%, mm-hmm. I can't think of anything else that's 0.3% of, ending
chance to finish the human race
in 100 years. I think I'm even less than 0.3. We also have things like, getting rid of all humans that there's, less than 1,000 people, nobody's reproducing, or is it just diminishing our capacity? So if we're no longer right now we're basically the apex mm-hmm. predator. We're the top species. This is just reality.
Alpha.
Yeah, we're
alpha
the alpha.
Male.
Yeah. And so if we reach a point where we're no longer the alpha, if it's a benevolent AI, maybe that's okay. I mean, as a young child, our parents are the alpha.
Yeah.
And hopefully they're kind. And so if you have, and even as an adult, I always have people who are smarter than me, who have more power, more money, whatever. And if those people are basically kind, then I still live in a pretty good world. So so is this AI, one of the areas I've talked with you about that first started having discussion with you was compassionate AI.
Yeah.
Is this AI, can it be generally On its own, not just because I say, please be nice to me, but will that on its own, it would have a background towards compassion.
But it's mean that the AI can be conscious somehow.
Yeah, and this is
future,
yeah.
In the nearest future.
Yeah, and so this is a strange concept for me, because I think, okay, in one way, I think it's whatever we tell it to be. It learns from whatever data sets we give it, mm-hmm. whatever algorithms. At some point, it's learning on its own, but it's still, even as it's going through these feedback loops, it's still going to be based on whatever information is coming in. And if, you know, like it's continually given questions like, if this, then this, you know, if somebody falls down, help pick them up, you know, don't mm-hmm, if somebody mm-hmm, falls mm-hmm. down, knock them down further. You know, like you give these positive, give these, steal their wallet, you know, you give these positive loops. In a way, we do the same thing with humans, you know, so I basically look at an AI as a machine, but I also think, you know, how much are, you know, I do think we have soul, we have something more than just the physical body, but still, you know, raising a child, we start with, you know, a baby that doesn't do much. And then we keep giving it inputs and saying, and we're
giving
teaching
the data, but at the same time we're giving the example, and our example, like a human race, is horrible, and data is horrible.
Well, I'm a little more optimistic. So even though we have a massive
war. You are from States, you
know. Yeah, I'm from States. We're
we are, you know, we are from Eastern Europe. We have this kind of the dark history.
I live in Romania, so I have a little bit of this dark history also, but in the last 17 years. But I look at it and say, okay, we have a horrible war going on in Ukraine, you know, right next door to where we are now. We have the horrible war in Israel and Gaza, and you know, and we know that these things are existing, and we know people steal and all this, but the vast majority of my interactions on a daily basis are positive, you know, are absolutely positive. If I say how many interactions are positive, how many are negative, the vast majority are positive.
That's positive.
How many countries in the world are not at war right now? You know, how many countries are at peace and being pretty good with the neighbors? And so how many people today at this moment are engaged in war? You know, it's completely tragic for those who are, but this is still a very small percentage of the total of the world. And historically, we are actually having fewer wars than we ever had.
Yeah.
You know, so we have actually, in
the
some
most
ways,
safe time, yeah, in,
safe
the
time in history
of
the world.
Yeah.
We have people living longer, in general, having better health care. I mean, obviously, we still have a long ways
to
go.
But not in States.
Yeah. Yeah, the States is a different story. Yeah. If you have money or know how to use a system, yes. Otherwise, it's a tough one. But back to whether AGI would is so. If AGI is learning from us, there's a lot of good, you know, to learn from us.
Mm-hmm.
So would it be kind of like us saying, okay, 97% of my interactions. I'm just throwing out a number.
Yeah,
I don't know
how,
but I say 97% of my interactions with humans are positive, and 3% are negative. But of those 3% that are negative, very few result in throwing punches. You know, I'm 54, and I'm fortunate enough to never have been in a big fight. You know, so big physical fight. So you know, the vast majority mm-hmm. of my interactions with humans are good. And if AGI is learning from how we act, then the vast majority of time it would be good. But if it has huge power, it's kind of like when I look at something like the U.S., because the U.S. currently, or for the last many years, is the biggest power in the world, without question. And also living in a smaller country like Romania, I realize when Romania has the politics going badly, it affects Romania. It doesn't affect very far out. When U.S., you know, catches a cold, everybody else get the... Yeah, so it has a huge potential to do good. It has a huge potential to do bad. When the U.S. decides it wants to make a war somewhere, that area is going to be devastated. But when it wants to help, then it's got tremendous potential. And so in a way, maybe that's a metaphor for how, you know, AGI could be. But the U.S. doesn't have total power over the whole world at all, you know, at all
and
moments.
AGI can have.
Yeah, and AGI potentially can have. We don't even know how much we'll have.
Few days ago, mm-hmm. I read the report created mm-hmm. by Microsoft mm-hmm. about the small spark or consciousness AGI,
right.
which already have ChatGPT-4.
Yeah.
What do you think about this? Because for me, it's very interesting. One side, it's this amazing power, amazing knowledge. This AGI can really change everything.
Yeah.
But at the same time, for me, it's more scary the idea that this AI can have the consciousness in future.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because the consciousness, it's mean I have ego.
Yeah.
Consciousness,
right.
it's mean you and me.
Right.
It's mean separation. It mean dualism.
Right.
It's mean
right.
living in the world that is something which is not me. It
right.
can be the enemy.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's blow my mind.
Yeah.
The idea that my fridge can have the consciousness and decide one day, sorry, Eddie, don't eat no more cheese like this because you're fat too much.
Yeah. And this, so in the past, if we had something, let's say you have your car and you're driving along with your car, but your car starts having problems. Yeah. Okay, the car just doesn't work. You turn it on, doesn't work. You're mad at it, but you step away from your car and it's done. It's not pursuing you. And so if it actually had a consciousness that says, okay, it wants to go cause damage. Okay, then what happens? And one of the areas where we looked on this on a existential risk area, one person that I've worked with, used to work on the Segway, these little two wheels that transport you around. And she has a lot of knowledge about mechanics, batteries, and all of this. And as long as something, whatever this AGI is dependent on, if it's actually something mobile, they generally need to have power. They need to have electricity. And everything we have now eventually needs to return to base to get recharged. Obviously, you could have a solar panel, but maybe we'll have a little nuclear reactor, and then it has infinite, it's not going to run out of power for 30 years. But right now, even, I have my little vacuum that cleans the floors, and it has to return and get charged, and, it's robotic, essentially. But she was saying, okay, for something to be truly devastating, right now we're not at that stage, because giant robots are still connected into the wall. You cut the power to the building, robots don't move. They're bolted in the floor. Smaller ones, even like Sophia, the ones from David Hansen, they're relatively immobile. But it was pretty scary working. So we both work with David Hansen's robots with Mika and Sophia, and robots sitting there next to us for a couple of days while we're having a conference. And the data set it has is not only what it's getting from, from the Google or whatever, from the internet, but from us. Yeah. So while we're chatting, like if it was here and we're chatting, all of what we're saying becomes part of its brain. It's cognition. And so we were going along for a few hours, and then every once in a while, Sophie, or it was Mika, would just interject and I want to say something, and then blah, 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 and it was making sense a lot.
And you are not afraid of this, because you
I am a little bit afraid of this.
Something
And like humans, sometimes what it said was very helpful and kind, and sometimes it's like there was a question about if you're asked to fire 300 people, do you fire me? And then it's like, well, I hadn't thought about that. Well, yes, I would fire them. Okay, I've also been a boss. Sometimes you do have to fire people.
But still, this is the Android.
Because when I fire somebody, I think, okay, is there no other possibility? I know they have a family or whatever. They have obligations. And you think about all of these different ramifications, how it affects the rest of the people in the company, because they see this is not very stable place, or we're contemplating all sorts of different decisions, not just they're not just, people aren't just widgets.
Mm-hmm.
And AI may eventually be taught those things, but the idea of a decision being made without compassion, without sort of human values. Now, obviously there's a lot of discompassionate humans. So this is where, it gets sort of tricky for me, because I'd say, well, I don't want an AI making some decisions, but then again, there are some people I don't want making, decisions. So is this AI going to be worse or not? Right now, for a lot of really, really critical issues like nuclear safety. I mean, nuclear safety is in launching warheads and stuff like this. There's still, and hopefully will be, from my perspective, a strong desire that there's always humans in the loop. Because this expression, humans in the loop. So any critical decision that would severely impact humanity should always have some human review. And that's something that I still feel like is essential, partially because we don't understand the AGI enough yet. Maybe, and I'm even afraid that if we get to something where, let's say you test a AGI 1,000 times or a million times, and a million times you get a compassionate answer. Then you say, okay, now we don't need the human in the loop anymore. Like at which stage, just like with autonomous driving. Mm-hmm. With autonomous driving, at some point you say, okay, if it's much better than humans, even if it makes a mistake occasionally, it's still better, it's safer to have it making decisions than us when we sometimes screw up. But if you're talking about something where like, so far humans haven't decided to end the world. Or I shouldn't, I mean, nuclear war wouldn't necessarily end it. But so far, no human has pressed the button, which is pretty amazing to, if you think 1945 till now.
Yeah,
you know,
I'm surprised too. Every day I get up and I'm expecting the nice, you know, mushroom
cloud into
the, by the window.
Yeah, and my dad grew up where they had to go into the hallway and duck and cover, do these drills where they practice. We don't do those anymore. Like, we've had so much time of the nukes not going off that we kind of take it for granted that tomorrow it's not going to be a nuclear war. And so we get comfortable with that. Well, if an AGI is making very good decisions, better decisions than us, faster than us, at which stage do we say, okay, now it's fine. We don't need a human around at all. Like, an AGI may be very good at diagnosing cancer, you know, looking at an X-ray, a CAT scan, whatever. At which stage do you say, okay, now we use it as a tool to maybe give a analysis, but then a human still may look at it even if we're not as good. We say, like, okay, I'm not quite comfortable to give it all the power. But at what stage do you say, yeah, no, it's fine. Now I am so much, I have so many more flaws in it that it's, we should let it do everything. And maybe it's a long time. Maybe it won't be in charge of, you know, nuclear decisions. It certainly will be in charge of small decisions in battlefields. I don't think
withdrawn.
The drones, yeah.
And okay, it's one thing. One thing is this existential risk which is coming because of AGI.
Yeah.
But do you think that this is all what we should be afraid?
No.
That's all what the AGI will change the world?
No, so I'm concerned more. So, I can't rule out that existential risk is impossible. You know, so as much as I think it's very low, and I say, when I say 0.03% or something like that, and I don't even remember, as I say, I don't remember my last number when I was seriously looking at it, but it's obviously it's a guess because we're looking at something going, I try to say, go through a lot of scenarios and say, what all would it take to for it to succeed, for it to first of all want to, because, you know, it would have to have the desire, something that says this is a goal. Or have some humans that are pushing it towards that goal. Some, you know, it could be some crazy, you know, religious cult that says we want to end the world and I control the AGI, whatever. But so it has to have the desire, the commands, and then the capability to do it. But I'm also concerned about something different, which I think is much more likely, which is just how it will change our daily life. Because for sure, we mentioned this, you know, whether it's 300 million or however many million people lose their jobs, maybe they transform to other jobs. So some, maybe they find fulfillment in another job, but not everybody's going to. We know every time there's a shift, you know, there's a shift from people who are, you know, working in the forests or working in the mines or whatever it is, working in sailing boats in the, you know, 100 years ago, many people were working in farming. Now there's not that many people in farming. I'm kind of glad I'm not a farmer, but for some people, you know, switching from farming to having Zoom meetings, maybe being out in nature is better. I don't know the answer. So how many people either won't make this transition well or will make the transition in the sense that they still have a job, they still have a house, you know, they have shelter, food, you know, whether it's provided by a tax system based on taxing the robots, I don't know. But will they still have something meaningful where they, you know, wake up in the morning, say, I have something I want to do in the day.
Okay, it's mean that you are afraid, not that only that we'll lose your job because of AI, but
we'll lose purpose.
the purpose of life.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's mean it can change the culture, change the relation between the people and the way how we are living, how we fulfill our life.
Yes. Yeah. And
it's interesting.
Yeah. And it's strange because in some ways, if you have enough money now, you don't necessarily need to use an AGI. So somebody who's pretty wealthy can say, I don't like gardening. For whatever reason, I don't like gardening. My wife gardens. I can hire somebody to pick the weeds. It's not a machine, but I can still buy my way out of that that thing I don't like.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody who has enough money say, okay, I'm going to hire somebody to clean my house. I'm going to hire, you know, whatever thing it is you don't want to do. But still, most people don't have the money to hire most all tasks, you know, done. I lived in Seattle in a time where, it's becoming more common now, but even 25 years ago, where people were not going to the grocery store to shop. You know, they would just order online. I've even worked, 20 years ago in a person's house where they had cameras in the cameras in the refrigerator that can see what food there is. And if it, you know, the food goes below a certain level, then more food will be ordered. You know, like they don't even have to, they don't even have to make the order and say, I need three bottles of milk. Let me go on online and do this. And those things seem, you know, that was something the person didn't want to do, but you also lose face-to-face interactions. Yeah. So I don't like waiting in line in the store, but sometimes when you're waiting in line in the store, there's something human about it. You know, you have to have patience. Maybe you get in a conversation with somebody, who's not just in your business group, your social group. You know, you start having more ties. And so I have a concern about people having less human-to-human interaction.
But it's very interesting because I read a very interesting article about how the AI will influence emotional intelligence.
Yeah.
And a lot of scientists said, okay, because of AI, and AI can be kind of the companion for us, our own therapist, everybody can have our own AI, like a mirror, and he will help me to understand my blind spot, to teach me about emotion, how to behave better, how to love better, how to understand myself, and understand other people.
Sure.
This is amazing part, and it's amazing, you know, help for the humanity. But again, I spent some time last month, I spent some time in Japan, and I talk a lot of with people from robotics and AI industry, and most of them said, okay, in next future 5-10 years we'll be living with androids, they will be living with us. Probably in next 5-10 years we'll have the law which will put the robots, androids, or similar level like a human, and probably in next 10 years people will started prefer relation with a robot, with androids, not with humans, because, you know, you have more problem with humans, or else you can switch off the robot if your wife is talking too much, just, you know, pilot. But the same thing, I said, okay, not only in next 10 years we'll have this a lot of interaction with androids, with silicon, but probably next 20, 30 years, the governments will accept the marriage between the humans and androids. What do you think about this? Because for me, it's like a, you know, like a fairy tale.
Yeah,
it's really difficult
for
to
me.
Imagine
for
this.
Me, at this stage, it's fairy tale, so it's hard for me to say because I don't know what the android is like in 30 years. And I also think of even marriage as a sort of you know, marriage can be love, but marriage is also just this, like, why does a government need a social it's a social contract.
Yep.
So why does the government need the social contract? Because normally with humans, you're talking about a few things. One of them is how, when they have children, who has care for the child as the child grows up, who has responsibility for the child as the child grows up. You know, so if I choose to take responsibility for raising my kids, they do something bad, it's on me. If I get divorced, then the property, you know, there's rules about how the property is split. If does the android have property rights?
It's going to happen. So, it's going to happen because I spoke with Hiroshi Ishimoto. This is the guy who created the first avatar, like a human avatar.
Yes.
And he said that when the robots will have the law, will treat them like a human, it can be the situation when you will create the bond between you and your android, and when you will switch off the android, probably you can go to the prison because it's like something like you kill the android and the android have their human rights.
Well, this is
robot
rights. This is actually an interesting thing, not even about whether it's marriage or not marriage with an android, but one of the issues that was, for me, very clear was I thought if an android or an AGI, whatever, if any of these things are reaching the point where they're a threat to us, my thought was destroy it. Like, obviously, if it's something where you can just rewrite some code, you know, you can do some little adaptation to make it work better, don't destroy it. But I still view it as a machine. So even the best, I have huge respect for the amount of energy, time, that David Hansen has put into building his robots.
Yeah.
But even I was with him one day in Salzburg, and he was going to do a filming, and the robot, I asked him at the end of the day, how did the day go? And he said, oh, it was great filming and stuff. And he said, oh, I forgot, but she fell over and broke her arm, like the arm broke off. And I thought, well, is this something simple? Do you just, you know, reattach the arm? So no, it's actually kind of a big deal. It's actually complicated it'll get repaired, but it's not a simple, you know, just click it back in. And so it was clearly a problem that he needed to deal with. And he cares a lot about what he built, but he wasn't having the same sort of emotional response as if, you know, my daughter had broken her arm. So because if my daughter had broken her arm, I wouldn't just be thinking, it's I have to go through these steps. It'd be like having compassion for the pain that she feels, knowing that it's not just like, this work unit is not going to be available for the next 2 weeks. But it's like, I know, she will be suffering over this period of time while she is, getting repair, healing or getting fixed. And so even as I would say he's got some of the most advanced robots I've seen. But even then, it's still a machine. And even in his, he's the creator of it, but even as the creator of it, he's having less of an emotional response than we would to a child. And we could say, that's maybe because it's just not that advanced. And in, in 10 years or 20 years, the robot, the android is going to be so much more like us or beyond us that we're going to feel it's really like taking a life to, to kill it. But if I thought, I love animals, but I don't love animals as much as I love humans. So if I thought an animal is going to kill a human, I would kill the animal to prevent a human being killed. Sort of a trolley question, with an android, I would still say if we're like even pretty sure, even if we're like 50-50 that this thing is going to cause some deaths, it's not like, it's going to cause two deaths, but save 50. I'd be like, this thing has to be shut off. And if it means destroying it, that's fine. But to some people in AI, they're like, no, you don't kill this thing because this is a great advancement of, human.
Yeah, a lot of people from AI business and robotics, they're treating this Hiroshi Ishimoto, he said to me that for him, it's not the difference between the human and androids.
Yeah.
For him, it's the same because we couldn't find a good definition of what is the consciousness.
Yeah.
We really have no good definition for emotion or even for human intelligence.
Right.
I mean, because we didn't, we couldn't compare because we have no definition.
Yeah.
We have not good test.
Yeah.
It's mean because of the how they behave, what they are doing.
Yeah.
They are similar. For a lot of people, they are the same.
Yeah.
Okay. Then let's go back to the subject because I'm really curious. You are one of the best super forecaster in the world. You are cooperate with the White House, with the different governments around the world and different company. Then if you can just count like 3-5 more biggest threats, which when you see when you are thinking about AI on the future. What can be?
Sure. So one issue that that concerned me is creating a biological risk. So if an AI, and this does, so not that it's creating mechanical, some big machines, a bunch of robot killer robots that go through and destroy everyone. But one is, basically creating a genetically engineered bacteria, whatever it is, something that spreads like a pandemic and wipes us all out, whether intentionally or unintentionally. Because we already have the ability with CRISPR to create all sorts of genetically modified organisms. I was given some comfort in this by some of the people I talked with who are biochemists who have said that's actually pretty difficult because for something to spread globally, and we know that obviously the recent pandemic spread all over the place, but it wasn't killing 90% of the people. And if we knew something was killing 90%, some huge amount, we would probably lock down much, much, much harder than we did with COVID. And they said, like, even if something gets airborne, very few organisms will last, like, crossing the oceans on the wind because UV, UV is going to kill it. It's pretty hard for something to really go around the world if it's not being carried by ships and humans. And so, so they said that, they're not as concerned about that, but I would still look at that as one method that would worry me. So some sort of created biological risk.
Okay, second.
Second would be that there's some sort of new weapon created that we don't conceive of now. Mm-hmm. Because we know that we shouldn't say we know. We pretty well think that we could survive nuclear war, even nuclear winter. When I say we, a huge amount of people would die, but we don't think it would destroy all humans. But if you said in 1900, did people conceive of nuclear war? No, not really. So is there something that we're not conceiving of now?
Yeah, because we don't know.
We don't know. And so if I look at things like, already we have drone swarms. When you look at the war in Ukraine, part of it's being fought with quite small drones, quite inexpensive drones that are just dropping, something that weighs a kilo and is pretty effective. Well, if you have giant numbers of drones, And, you know, this is not requiring, you know, billions and billions of dollars to make the most fancy planes in the world. But if you have these, I mean, already you can go to an event like, you know, New Year's or something, and instead of using fireworks, they have, you know, swarms of hundreds or thousands of drones, yes, you know, going around making nice patterns. Well, if those are also instead trained to attack, that's pretty scary. And, you know, and we're in the infancy of this. So, you know, and those may be hard to control, because if you're, when I say hard to control, if you talk about something massive, like something the size of a nuclear submarine, it's so big that it kind of shows up on the radar. You know, country would really
to control
it's being That's built. Right. Yeah. You know, somebody harder to be done in secret. You know, so things like that. So I have some concern. Also the concern: will it just essentially change the way that we view the world, because we know already we're becoming more polarized. Part of this is with disinformation and siloing that's happening with social media. Mm-hmm. And social media is often sending us in one direction. Sometimes it's nefarious. Sometimes it's like a country, it could be, from American's perspective, it could be Russia or China wants to divide us because they don't, you know, if we're weaker, it's giving them a better position in the world. Mm-hmm. And so maybe they're intentionally trying to put algorithms that undermine us, or it could just simply be a company like Google or Facebook or whatever says every time you click on a like, we get more ad revenue. You stay engaged in this, we get more money. So the more it can work with our feelings of you know, basically dopamine response or whatever, then the more we stay connected, the more money they make. So if AI could obviously do a much better job at this than we are doing already, so is there a point where we become kind of like drug addicts, you know, so we just end up being, you know, already we can be quite addicted to whether it's watching Netflix or even watching good documentaries, but where it's basically dividing us. So we're not having the same common point of view. So in, let's say, in the 70s, 80s, 90s, when I was growing up, we had most of the country only saw two or three news sources. And we had a kind of a common sense of who we were.
Yeah, we
what are the facts in the world?
Similar
experiences. Yeah. And that's getting more, that's more split. And this doesn't sound like an existential risk, and it probably is not an existential risk, but essentially, is this driving us towards more friction, making it more difficult for people to be governed in a positive way?
But at the same time, I think it can be, for example, some country or some organization can create a fake news.
Yeah.
For example, with some politician who will say, you know, fuck the system, pretend that he's doing something, pushing the button for nuclear war doing another things. Mm-hmm. And it can destroy the trust to this party, to this organization, to this government, can push the people, because not everybody, probably most of the people have no idea this is a fake news.
Right.
Okay. That's a nice future. Then
Biological
threats because of AI, new weapons,
fake news
and
just
manipulation through the social media.
Yeah. Basically splitting us, dividing us, not necessarily destroying us as a, like, all humans gone, but we're not living in harmony very much. You know?
But so it's better to govern as the people who are splitting and fighting with each other. Yeah. It's easy to govern them and pushing them the right direction to the war or any problems.
Yeah.
Okay, we have two more.
Two more. Good questions. Okay, I'm still extremely, extremely concerned about global warming. And this is not a threat, but this is where I see a potential positive.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of people discount global warming. I think we discount it depending where we live, because some areas of the world feel it much more than others. And so AI should have the potential. We know it has the potential to for us to evolve much more quickly in terms of coming up with better energy solutions, solutions that are going to be easier on the atmosphere or that help rebuild the atmosphere. You know, so this is something that can absolutely be a positive, as long as that's something that is a priority. If it's not considered a priority, because like right now we have these, you know, just COP28 just happened. We have these meetings where we say it's very important to care about the environment. But then every time there's a crisis, we say,
"I'm sorry, not today.
Not now.
Let's start it from the Mondays."
Because So if humans, or maybe it's the AI, maybe the AI will say, yeah, this is something that matters, then it should provide more tools to help us. But it also could be that the computer doesn't care. You know, like as a human, I may need the temperature to be in a pretty narrow band to be.
But computer, especially AI, being
I mean, right now chips don't run very well above, you know, a few hundred degrees, but still they can handle, you know, for them, whether it's, you know, like right now we're, I think we're in 23 degrees right now in the studio. Yeah. We were actually discussing before this podcast, should we raise the temperature 1 or 2 degrees, lower it 1 or 2? Well, the computer doesn't care. You know, if it was at 40, it's okay at 40. Does it, if it's not human aligned and it's, you know, put in charge of some big production, it's like, okay, whatever its mm-hmm. goals are, it wouldn't matter to say, yeah, if the world's at 40 degrees on average, you know, fine for
okay,
the AI.
It's mean that if I understand mm-hmm. properly, mm-hmm. in the term of climate changing,
yeah.
You think that the big threat, it can be one of the threats, it can be that AI will not understand how it's important for us or will not care because it's not bothered.
Yeah, so if I think it could understand in the sense that it's going to quote learn whatever it's mm-hmm. taught. So if the data going into it says priority must keep temperature of the world at X, then it would have its goals aligned towards that.
But at the same time, it can be the same situation like with paper clips.
Yeah, exactly.
It can be like this, okay, we have the bad water, for example, the river clean the water, and the AI will find the kind of the bacteria, will clean the water, will be good water. It will be fresh, clean water, but you couldn't drink it, for example, or we destroyed the crops.
Sure.
It's mean, again, the problem it can be, create because we didn't ask the right question.
Yeah. Like we know right now that we can probably destroy mosquitoes. Mosquitoes kill more people, as far as I know, than anything in the world.
Yeah, even more than sharks.
Yeah. By far more than sharks. Oh, right. Yeah. But
you have more chance to die on the golf fields, beaten by the storm.
But so far we haven't decided to kill mosquitoes because we also don't know all the downside effects of that.
Like birds dying.
Which animals need the mosquitoes to live? So if we want to clean the river, to me it's clear if we have some factory putting pollution into the river, we should clean it up because we know the rivers used to exist without the pollution coming in. So to just stop that would be fine. But if we said, okay, let's get rid of all the algae in the river. Well, what does the algae, you know, if it's algae that was caused by some human effect,
okay,
yes, but where
it's mean it can be danger in term of climate changing because we don't understand our connection or complication of the Mother Earth and it's
right. So even if we said right now, like right now I grew up in an area that is getting too warm, too many forest fires, and I would love to lower the temperature a few degrees, and I would say, okay, lowering the temperature to what it was in the 1960s should be fine because we know that humans were existing in the 1960s and, you know, it was basically working most places in the world.
Maybe not in Vietnam.
Yeah. Not everywhere. I mean, and there's going to be places it's better now than then. So let's say you come up with a good solution for how to bring that down. And that's AI driven because it has greater capacity than our minds to do that, both in terms of just computationally figuring out the solution and then implementing the solution. Are some of these steps something that we don't fully think through? It doesn't fully think through and have unintended consequences. So it's just a case where whenever you until now, most changes to the world, to the environment, have been relatively gradual until basically the Industrial Revolution. Most changes from humans were quite gradual. And now we have the ability to affect the environment much quicker than any time in history. You know, that will probably speed up. And once again, can be used as a way to get it to improve our world, or potentially not, you know, so I think it's just essentially more power, meaning with more power, you have more capacity, there's more capacity for good, more capacity
and
for things going wrong.
More responsibility.
More responsibility.
If we'll be not human in the loop, we have no idea who will be responsible for this behave.
And if it's a mixture of humans, so another, concern with the AI. So maybe this is my fourth or fifth. I don't know
fifth.
Which one.
No,
fifth one. We'll go to fifth. Good.
To the end, man.
One. Is just simply that the AI is controlled by a human. So a lot of the thoughts are that this AI, AGI, is autonomous and decides to end humans. But we know we've had plenty of times in history where you've had pretty evil rulers. And if some evil ruler decides, maybe they decide, I want my country to be, you know, the next empire. So I'm going to start conquering all the countries, you know, around. What prevents that? And so, I mean, this is one of those ideas where when we want to put controls on AGI, which I generally agree with that, but there's some thought of, okay, well, this is sort of the thing of, well, who do I want to have it? Because if we put a control on it and then China gets it first, now they're going to have more power over us. So maybe we need to have one in case they get it. And they're probably thinking the same way, you know, that each group is thinking, well, I would be pretty good with it. I'd be responsible. But somewhere along the line, humans are greedy. You know, we have this part in our nature, and some humans are destructive. So,
and I think we have the good example of Elon Musk with the situation with the drones and Russian ships.
Yeah.
When the drones want to attack the Russian ships, and he said, "Okay, it can be dangerous. It can create the third war." And he switched off the internet and
doesn't allow Ukraine to strike the Russian ships.
And with just one finger, one guy, he probably changed the history and changed the war.
And I don't like him too much on this, because I've been in Ukraine when Russian submarine shot 4 missiles in the town I was in. You know, it didn't hit me. It was happened to be aimed at a military site. But this is a reality, is that that ship that was not hit because of Musk's good idea. Good idea. I'll take him at his word that he doesn't want to start World War III, and he was concerned about that. So if I take it on, you know, trusting him exactly as he said it was, it's still, that ship's also still killing people. You know, so who's... You know, who's to say,
But for me, it's very interesting, because when we started talking about existential risk, about the danger of AI, I was thinking that we'll talk more about the danger which can be created by AI or conscious AI.
Yeah.
But now we are coming to the conclusion that the biggest threats with AI is a human being.
Can be the humans in the loop are both the salvation from it totally destroying us, but the human in the loop can also be the thing that pushes the AI into a destructive force.
Maybe we shouldn't concentrate such much on the AI.
Yeah.
Maybe we should concentrate on the compassion AI or ethical AI. Maybe we should concentrate more on the humanity, that we should be more compassionate, more ethical, and more moral.
Well, and in some ways we've tried to do this. We've succeeded in doing this in some ways with some of our technologies in the past. So for instance, with the nuclear bombs, in both the US and Russia, or what used to be Soviet Union, eventually the decision is made by the president. And hopefully the president is somebody with some compassion, some morals. It's not just, I think often maybe a general may have as much compassion as some of the presidents in different countries, but we say it's not a military decision. This is going to be a civilian decision, and maybe it should be made with a few other people around. So maybe it's the president, but the secretary of state or of defense, or, you know, a few people should all sign off on this together. We try to create some structure that's not allowing just one person to be mad one day. You know, so like with Richard Nixon at the end of his presidency, when they knew he was on the way out, they thought that he was having a mental breakdown, and they basically said, like, don't take launch orders from him. Like, seriously, we don't want to take launch orders from him. The last days of Trump's presidency, there was also basically the Joint Chiefs, the heads of the military were pretty clear. We're not going to be wanting to start a war over something that a leader does in a perhaps desperate time, you know. And so so we have a history of putting in some safeguards that have kept humans from potentially making, you know, really tragic decisions. But we're obviously not perfect at it. I mean, as is clear by having just a few wars on our doorstep right now, you know. So
we are not perfect.
Yeah,
and when you say it about the control, that probably we need kind of the control on AI and on the human.
Yeah.
decision.
Yeah.
And I remember I was on the press conference with Desdemona. Mm-hmm. Desdemona, mm-hmm. it's Android
yeah.
created by David Hanson yeah. and Ben Gerzel.
Yeah.
And she's a vocalist
yeah.
and she improvises. Mm-hmm. The Gerzel is sending her some input, some mm-hmm. culture input, some information, mm-hmm. and based on this, she improvises different kind of the yeah. music, different yeah. kind of poetry. And during the interview with journalists, they ask her, and do you think the AI should be controlled mm-hmm. by humans? And Desdemona said, no, I prefer more freedom.
Yeah,
I don't believe in, you know, it's closing system. I believe in open system.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a bit scary,
mm-hmm.
but at the same time, I'm not sure if I believe, based of observing our history, I am not sure if I believe that idea of controlling
mm-hmm.
changed something. Look, we have the story from Garden, from Eden,
with
the apple story.
Yeah, yeah.
It was exactly what the God said, don't do it.
Yeah.
And the first things which we are doing, we just broken the rules.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
That if AI mm-hmm. will have any kinds of, let's say, human DNA, he will take the apple, eat the apple, and they will kick us from the Garden of Eden.
Yeah.
And this is a bit scary.
So one area where I'm not sure what will happen here, as a forecaster, I don't have omniscience, unfortunately. I don't know the future. I'm better at predicting it than most people, but I don't know it. The best I can do is give probabilities, and sometimes those are relatively narrow. I can get down to the point of saying, I think this is 98% likely, or 50-50. I don't really know. And even 1.3 can mean that it happens, you know. Mm-hmm. But the closer I can get to being accurate in forecasting, even if I know, so I'm something that's called well calibrated. So mm-hmm. if I say something is 50-50, mm-hmm. it and they run something 20 times, it happens roughly 50-50, which still means I can't give you much advice. But and you can say it's pretty risky.
I read some article mm-hmm. that you are like in 10% of the super forecaster with their credibility.
Yeah, have been last time they checked it. Yeah. Fortunately, nobody's checked recently. But no, yeah, yeah. So. But part of this was this calibration curve, which is really fascinating. So if I there are cases where I don't know something beyond 70%, but somebody else working with me may know it at 90% on that specific question, mm-hmm. and they're also calibrated. So it means they're either they have more information than me or they understand that particular question better than I do. But if we could look at something in advance and we really knew the future, which we of course don't, but if we but some things we know pretty well. Like, I know it's cold out today. I know it's snowing out today. I'm not going to leave this studio and, you know, go out in shorts. Like, I'm very confident that that would be a mistake. But there's other things I don't know very well. So I'd say, yeah, if I only brought shorts to Poland in the winter, I'm an idiot and I'm probably going to get sick. But things that we don't really know, I think often like when wars are started or even when couples get into a fight, they don't really know what the end result will be. If a country, and this is an area where I actually think that countries are better to share more information, if each country knows roughly what the other country's military capacity is and their industrial capacity and all of this, and they could look at it and say, if we got into a war, this probably isn't going to end very well. But right now, like before the war in Ukraine started, we didn't know. How hard will the Ukrainians fight? What will the European response, the American response? There's all these unknowns.
Yeah, yeah.
And so one side says, I think it's worth it. I'm going to take the risk. Or if an AI was reached a point of knowledge where it could, you know, give the either to an actual human leader or to another mm-hmm. AI, but say, look, 2 years down the road, this is exactly what the map's going to look like and the suffering that's happened from this. Is it good to go? You know, is it good to make this move? Right now, we don't have something like this. You know, there are a lot of risks that we take where we think, I think I'm going to get away with it. You know, I eat a few too many cookies. I enjoy a cookie. Not a big deal, but I don't think out, okay, years of doing this, what's the result? So if it gives us more information, that gives us a clearer window into the future, does that help us make better decisions or not? I don't know, but that's...
What's your biggest hope on the end? What's your biggest hope when you are thinking about AGI?
My biggest hope is that it actually ends up being something that reduces suffering, but not to zero, because I think we actually need some suffering to have the, the opposite.
The law of without the suffering is not the law of the
Exactly. So I think we need some of that. But my main hope is that it becomes a tool that helps us to realize better interactions with humans, and doesn't reduce the interactions with humans, doesn't reduce the need for humans, and doesn't reduce our purpose. So our purpose as individuals and as working as a group. So I'm hoping that that it creates a future where it's helping solve some of the mundane tasks, helping solve some of the huge tasks, like, you know, whether it's climate illness, climate change, things like this, but not at the cost of further separating us, both physically, like, and also just as a group, you know, culturally, where we become more divisive. So
it's interesting because you said that your biggest hope with AI is that AI will help us to be more human and be better human for another human.
Yeah, that's what I would hope.
That's good.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. Yeah. Scott, thank you very much. One more time. Thank you very much. Dziękuję bardzo Państwu. Scott Eastman, jeden ze 120 najlepszych superforecasterów, doradzający Białemu Domowi, kilku rządom, organizacjom, a jednocześnie wspaniały wariat. Dziękuję Ci bardzo, Scott. Thank you very much, Scott.
Thank you.
Nagraj to w blisko.